Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Pranaktu, Sahavirya Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Mavid Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
1 verse 8.
Iyam Atma Paranandaha, Iyam Atma Paranandaha, Parapremaspadam Yataha, Parapremaspadam Yataha, Manabhuvam Hibhuyasam, Manabhuvam Hibhuyasam, Iti Premaatmanikshate, Iti Premaatmanikshate. So, Iyam Atma Para Anandaha Para Prema Aspadam Yataha Ma Nabhuvam Ibhuyasam Iti Premaatmani Ikshate. It says, Iyam Atma, this self, this Atma, this self, is Para-anandaha, is the supreme, or the supreme, I don't like that word, but anyway, Para, the supreme ananda. Means there is no ananda, or fullness, or wholeness, or happiness, joy, love, whatever word you want to use to point to this. There is no greater ananda than this. Para, that's the Para. Para-ananda. So Iyam Atma, this Atma, is the Para-ananda. Para-anandaha. So that's all in the nominative case. So Iyam Atma is para, the Para-ananda. There is no greater ananda than the ananda of the self. It's the supreme ananda. Para-premaspadam yataha. This is a little piece of logic here that maybe takes some contemplation to really understand the depth of it. But it says, Why do you say that this self is the supreme param, parama, para atma, parama ananda? Why would you say that this self is the parama ananda, para ananda? It says, yata, because, or since, it is para prema aspadam. Because it is the aspada, it is the locus of the most love. Para prema, there is no greater love than the love of myself. And so, if we look at our just experience within samsara, the things that make you the most happy are the things that you love the most. Right? I love those things that give me the most ananda. This is just in samsara. Those things that give me the most ananda, those are the things that are the most beloved. Okay, the things, of course, that give me the least ananda, or seem to take away my ananda, are the least loved. In fact, we have words for them. They're hated, they're disliked, they're hated, they're something that I want to escape from. The things that, of course, it's all projection, but we're just, samsara is all projection, so that shouldn't matter to us. This is the idea, though, is the things in the world which make me the most happy, right, those are the most loved. And so now, if I analyze in terms of all of the experience that I have in the world, including me, because I'm here also, the totality of the experiences that I have in the world, what in the world is the most loved? You say, well, actually, the Atma is the most loved. The self is the most loved. There's a very famous section of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I think it's when Bhrigu is speaking to his wife, to Gargi. I think those are the two a rishi involved, speaking to his wife, teaching her. And so he says to her, O Gargi, if it's Gargi, I think it is. O Gargi, Your son is the most beloved to you because he makes you happy. Your son is beloved to you because he makes you happy. You love your wealth because it makes you happy. If it didn't make you happy, it wouldn't love you. You wouldn't love it. Your son can become a tremendous source of pain for you. Right? He's no longer making you happy. Right? And so then he doesn't become the source of love for you. He becomes a source of pain. So who do you really love? If you love your son or you love your child because your child makes you so happy, you know, who do you love the most? What do you love the most? I said, well, you love your happiness the most. That's what you love the most. You love your wealth. Why? Because it makes you happy. You know? You love your farm. Why? They actually say all of this. It's not just our farm. Yeah, you love your farm, your place, because it makes you happy. Right? You love your cattle because they make you happy. You love your relatives because they make you happy. You know? And so who do you really love? What do you really love? You love the happy self. Right? You love your ananda. You love your wholeness. And anything within samsara that can give you a glimpse of that wholeness becomes loved. Why? Because they're giving you a glimpse of the wholeness. So what you're actually is the parama ananda, the para ananda, is that wholeness, that ananda. Because I do in the world whatever it takes, basically, as a dharmanishta within dharma, I do. People do it outside of dharma also, but I'm talking to us. So we do whatever needs to be done to support my ananda. So we can say for the sake of ananda, I do what I do. It even says, you do dharma, you are committed to dharma. Why? For the sake of ananda. Why? Because you've discovered that dharma, being a dharmanishta, means that's your commitment. There's a commitment to dharma. You live within dharma. You're committed to dharma. Why would I be committed to dharma? Because within relative reality, within samsara, there's nothing really that gives as much stable happiness as dharma. Because with dharma, it's kind of like the clear water bucket. I'm in harmony with Ishvara. If I'm committed to dharma, even if I have raga dvesha, my likes and dislikes and things, if they are contained within dharma, dharma itself is Ishvara. Right? And so my mind is always on the side of Ishvara. It's kind of like a clear water bucket, still in samsara, right? Because there's still me, this jiva, committed to dharma. There's still the subject-object relationship, or me, this jiva, committed to Ishvara, subject-object relationship. But that commitment to dharma gives me a relatively stable happiness, as opposed to being committed to sense pleasures. It gives me a very wobbly happiness. But say I am committed to sensory pleasures. I'm committed to those sensory pleasures. Why? Not because they make me miserable, but because I am hoping that they will make me happy, that they will be in support of myself as a whole, complete being. So I'm not at all committed to the unhappy self. I am committed to the happy self. You don't say, let me have this child so I can be miserable. Let me have this wealth so that I can enjoy my misery. Let me do this or do that or do this or do that in honor of, in support of my unhappiness. No. It's the exact opposite. I find myself within samsara giving up all of those things that I find make me unhappy, including a dharma, I'll give up sensory pleasures. I'll give up certain types of attachments that are not healthy for me. You know, I'll give up behaviors. Because as I discover that they contribute to my unhappiness, I give them up. I give up any type of adharma. As time goes on, as I mature, any type of adharma, I give that up. Because I can't, even sensory pleasure, no type of pleasure can get through the adharma. The adharma gives like a negative spin, a hurt, a guilt, a tension, in the ruining the sensory pleasure that I had wanted. So I give up all adharma. Why? Because I'm continually pranaming. I'm continually bowing down to the Parama Ananda, to that Ananda of the Atma. The Atma is that Parananda, you know? Because it is the most beloved. Whatever is the most beloved, if we look at all things that are there, that which is the most beloved is the Parananda. It wins. Right? The most beloved wins. Because being beloved, the one that you're most committed to, that you're most in love with, is going to be the one that gives the most Ananda. And so here what this verse says, this Atma, which says yam, yam means this. When we say this Atma, what we mean is this Atma that is you, not some conceptual Atma. This self is the Para Ananda, is the supreme Ananda. Why? Because it is the locus for supreme love. Para Prema. Prema means love. That which I love the most is the Ananda. And now, look in terms of your life. Everything that you love and hate, both, everything that you love and hate is always in relationship to your Ananda. So, what is the most beloved? You. But what about you? You are the most beloved, and so that means that you really are the source of Ananda. Another thing, this is, you have to contemplate on this because it's really so profound. You're never committed to the unhappy self because the unhappy self is not you. The unhappiness, the hurt, the pain, those are all things we want to get rid of. You don't want to get rid of yourself. You want to get rid of the pain or the hurt. You know, so we want to find a way out of that. What is the way out of that? So in fact, this is one of the things, as you know, Jagadishwar is saying, that makes a person a mumukshu. You want to get out of the hurt. You want to get out of the pain. Yeah. That's one of the criteria, one of the things that brings you to a mumukshu. How do I get out of this? How do I get out of this bondage? I don't want these things. But I say, do you want yourself? As I want myself without all of this pain. So you want yourself, but yourself actually is free of pain. The one who is the most beloved is the Parama Ananda, which is yourself. That's what they're saying. There's nothing more dear to you than yourself. And so yourself is the Para Ananda. It is the most, that which is the most happy or whole or complete or full. To really understand what Ananda means, it's not like a happy experience. Mm-hmm. Like blissful experience. It's something that is here right now. Totally present, experientially present right now. So you have to understand what Ananda means. Ananda is not something that comes and goes. So you have to ask, sometimes in contemplation you can say, okay, what are they talking about? They say Ananda. What about this me? Is the beloved. Why is it the beloved? You have to just sit with that, and at some point, it dawns on you. It's not like a happy experience, it's not a bliss experience. You're not probably having a bliss experience right now. But you are here right now. And so, what is it? Why is it that this is you is the most beloved? What does that mean? You know? What is that? even when you're sitting in contemplation, but because you have to break through, you have using this word is a complicated word because it has too much baggage. But it's an important word because there is nothing more whole or full or complete than yourself. So even when you're sitting in contemplation and just being with yourself, you know, what is it? What is that? Why is deep sleep so pleasing? You have to recognize it. Once you recognize it, because it's not an experience out here. The ananda that we're talking is not an experience out here. It's the very nature of you. And so, but these happy experiences are like lakshanas. They point to something that words can't say. They point to your own nature. Happy experiences, positive experiences, blissful experiences, the experience of love. All of these experiences point to this para-ananda. But to understand the para-ananda, you have to recognize yourself, and then you have to say something like, well, this self is ananda. Is that true? Well, then you could say something like this. Is there anything more beloved than me, than my own being? And you have to, in the end, say yes. As precious as all of these different things we have are, they are precious because they make me happy. Dharma is precious because it makes me happy. So it's the ananda of my own being which is the most precious. That's the thing to sit with. And you think, well, isn't that selfish? You would say, it has nothing to do with being selfish. It has to do with the nature of ananda itself. It's not about being selfish. Ananda is what everybody seeks in samsara. So then you would have to say, are all people selfish because they're seeking ananda in the world? They're trying to find that ananda, that wholeness, that love, that fullness in the world, but by being with this person, or having this job, or having this child, or having these animals, or creating this situation, or doing this, or doing that. We're seeking that state of ananda. One way you could say that state of being loved. We're always seeking that state of being loved. And you say, well, isn't that selfish that we're always seeking that state of being loved? I say, no, it's not selfish. It's the way the world works. That's the gas that keeps the world going. That's the gasoline. So the difference between an ajnani, somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge, and a jnani, is that the ajnani is seeking that ananda in the world. Trying to get it here from this person, here from this person, bring it out of this situation. Where the jnani has recognized that it has nothing to do with the world, it's my own nature. And so now the mind, instead of trying to find it in the world, just goes home. It just stays with me. You know, that's all it does. Why would it not just stay with me? I am the ananda. My nature is the ananda that all beings are seeking, running around seeking in the world. Once I find it, I found it. Then do you think that I'm just going to go away and, you know, try to find some more? We're not going to go try to find some more. You just want to be with yourself. And then being with yourself, then you enjoy Ishwara. As Ishwara is, you enjoy this creation as the creation is. Because you're not needing the creation to make you whole, because you've discovered the very source of your well-being, your very source of your ananda. So he says, this atma is the parananda because it is the locus of the greatest love, right? So you love the most is ananda. And then he gives an example for this. He says, This type of love is seen in the prema atmani, in the devotion or love for oneself. Prema means love in oneself. Prema atmani. This type of kind of devotion is seen in this form. It is true for all beings, even for animals. Ma nabhuvam. Let me not be. Let me not be. And also, he buyasam. Let me not be. and let me always be in the future. Right? Let me always be. Let me not be. Let me be. Don't take away my being. Don't kill me. Don't kill me. Don't let me die. Let me live a day longer. You know, some of you always joke about this, you know. Everybody says, I'm not afraid of death. I'm not afraid of death. It's no problem for me. So, okay. Let's do it. Let's do it right now. You say, no. Not right now.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow. Tomorrow. I'm not afraid of it. I'm not afraid of it. It's not that. But no, let's just, not now. Not now. Tomorrow comes, same thing.
Wow. You
know? Even Swamiji, who's not, I would say he's such a Mahatma, but, you know, he could give it up right now. But he doesn't. You know? He's here, you know. He'll be here when this body drops also, you know. His being. There's no question about that. But that desire to continue is such an amazing thing. Such an amazing thing. For him, for Swamiji, for anybody who has knowledge, that desire to continue is mitya. Because you already are that. You already are that. But that desire to continue belongs to the upadhi. Let me continue to be. Let me go on. And he'll joke. So once you gain self-knowledge, when your prarabdha, the fact is, when your prarabdha comes to an end, the karmas, then there is no more jiva. There's no more ajnanam there. So there's no more jiva. There's just you as Ishvara. You, in fact, are Ishvara. That's the truth of it. You know, but when these karmas come to an end, when the prarabdha comes to an end, then there's nobody reincarnated anymore. They're just you, the wholeness that you are, which is Ishvara. Okay. So, as this teaching goes on, somebody can think, because of the rope snake story, this is Swamiji's kind of joke with all this. You know the rope snake? When I gain, I'm mistaken, the rope for a snake, then I gain knowledge of the rope. The snake goes away. Okay. Because it's subjective, but in fact, it's true. When I gain knowledge of the rope, the snake goes away. So then the person will think, when I gave the knowledge of myself,
what goes away?
You know, whatever is projected will go away. That means I'll go away. This body, mind, sense organs will go away. That's incorrect. But that's the thinking, because this is a subjective example. And when you gain knowledge of something which is subjective, then the projection goes away and you're left with the object. This body, mind, sense organs is not subjective. This is not your imagination. This is Ishvara's imagination. Right? And so when you gain knowledge, your body, mind, sense organs remain until the karma runs out that caused you to take this birth. And then there is no more jiva, because even now there's not a jiva, in the sense that that ajnanam is gone. So there's just this body, mind, sense organs continuing on. But if somebody thinks, because of the rope snake story, that, okay, Swamiji's giving me this knowledge, I'm getting this knowledge now, but if I really gain it, the instant I gain it, I'll be gone. Just like the snake. I'll be gone like the snake. Now the question is, you want to continue on gaining this knowledge? When you know at any instant, you'll be gone. Right? Do you want to do that? No. I don't want to do that. I'll wait until I'm almost dead. Then I'll do it. When I'm almost dead, then it'll be... When my last breath, then let me gain that knowledge. In fact, it's also kind of like this for sannyasa. A lot of people, you know, taking the vows of sannyasa, a lot of people take those vows right before they die. They're on their deathbed. They're going to die at any moment. They will then take the sannyasa, because in the taking of the sannyasa, you're freed of all of your papa karmas. It's a very, very powerful ritual that frees you of so many karmas. But they don't want to be a sannyasi. They don't have to live like a sannyasi where they have to give everything up. And so I'll just take this sannyasa right before I die. You know? That's very common, actually. Trying to beat the system. trying to shortcut the system. So, what this says is, you know, we see that this love, this tremendous love of the self, just by this, let me live a day longer. Let me not die now. Let me live one day longer, you know. What do I care? Because I don't, if I'm a jnani really, I don't want to lose myself. I don't want to lose me, right? I don't want to lose me. And so when this body dies, I'm not sure that I won't die. Until I know, I'm not sure that I won't die. So when I die, even if I'm a subtle body, such a thing as a subtle body that transmigrates, I don't know that that's me. There's a soul transmigrating, but how do I know that that transmigrating soul is the same as me? And I don't want to lose me, right? I don't want to lose me. What if the me, this me, really is the body? Then when this body dies, I'm gone, so let me string it out for as long as possible, because I am the most attached to me. Why am I the most attached to me? Because why am I the beloved? Really, the self is the beloved. That which is the most beloved is the most source of ananda. You can give up everything else before you give up yourself. You give up everything else. There's other ways of talking about that. Giving up people die for the sake of dharma. They die for the sake of their child. They give up their life for the sake of the child. So they give up that which is the most beloved, most valuable to them. They give up for their child, which means that the ananda of them, their being, has been projected onto their child. It's an amazing thing. Yeah. You give up everything for that ananda. You would even give up your own life if the ananda is projected onto another. You could even give up your own life. So this is just a little aside, because I know you might have this doubt, so I'm talking about a little bit. You could even give up your own life for the sake of dharma, because dharma is your highest value, and your whole ananda is placed upon dharma. So you give up your life for dharma. You give up your life for Ishvara, because your ananda is superimposed upon Ishvara. But actually, Ishvara's ananda, God and the whole creation, Ishvara's ananda is only the Atma. The Atma is Brahman. There's only one Atma. That's why we say this Atma, this individual self that I am, is Brahman. What that means is there is only one Atma that all beings enjoy. All beings have the same one Atma. And that Atma, same, not twins, the same one non-dual Atma. That means that which is the most beloved, and the most beloved for all beings. Animals don't want to die. Animals protect themselves. They run away. They will run away from any type of threat. Why? Because they're protecting that which is the most beloved, which is the Atma, which is the self. Everybody protects that. Let me live a little bit longer. Let me live just a little bit longer. Just a little bit longer. I remember my grandfather saying, as he was on his deathbed, there's so many books I want to read. He was a scholar. So many books I want to read. I'm not going to be able to read my books. Let me just live a little bit longer. Live a little bit longer. Let me be. Let me continue. Also, you cannot conceive of your absence. It's not possible to think of what it would be like to not be here. I'll tell you why that's impossible. It's a really, you can think you're thinking of it, but you're not really. And this is, the reason is that whatever thought that you have, like say you imagine, okay, I'm going to die. This is the great thing that Ramana did. I imagine myself, now I'm dead, you know. So I'm having this dead imagination of myself. I'm dead, okay, I'm imagining that. But the one who's imagining it is alive, right? Every vritti you have, every imagination you have, every thought you have, right, is illumined by me. By me. And so even when I imagine myself as completely dead, the me still is. You can never imagine the loss of me, because me, the self, illumines whatever the imagination is. I can imagine myself as alive, me, I am illumining that. I can imagine myself as dead, I am illumining that. This body can drop. Asanga, this body which is objectified, it can drop. It doesn't make any difference. You know what it's like? I'm not going to do the whole waking dream and deep sleep, so just bring that back to your mind. Now think, when you wake up from a dream, say you're having a very real dream, it's a really three-dimensional, and you're totally in that dream. Okay, it's just, you know, numinous. You're having a real numinous dream, totally involved in it. Something happens, alarm goes off or something. That whole dream disappears like that. And you were in the dream, your friends were in the dream, there's a lot of activity, important things happening in the dream, right? Alarm goes off or whatever, it's gone, okay? And nothing happens to you. The whole dream universe is gone. Nothing has happened. Not anything. Not anything. Think of it like this. You have an imagination. Say I ask you to imagine a meadow. And a bunch of you are all walking through the meadow. It's a beautiful meadow. You know, the sun is shining. There's clouds in the sky. You're taking a walk through this meadow. You know, it's beautiful. You're engaged in it. You're looking, talking with each other. So you're imagining this meadow. And now you withdraw the meadow. Like that. Stop thinking about the meadow. Okay, now you're not thinking about the meadow. Meadow is here. Meadow is gone. Meadow is here. Meadow is gone. What happens to you? Absolutely nothing. When the meadow is here, that's great. The meadow is here. The meadow is gone. What's happened to you? Nothing. Dream is there, totally involved in the dream. Dream is gone. What has happened to you? Nothing. Nothing at all. The body is there. Body is gone. What has happened to you? Absolutely nothing. That's when what we mean, that's the profundity of what we mean, this subject-object relationship. Just think of this logic. If I'm aware of something, I'm aware of something, anything. If I'm aware of this body or I'm aware of this book, this object comes into my awareness, now it's known. I'm aware of it. It goes out of my awareness. This thought comes into my awareness. Now it's experienced, it goes out of my awareness. It's not there anymore. Okay. What has happened to me? Before the object came into my awareness, I was. The object is in my awareness, I am. The object goes out of my awareness, I still am. See that? Nothing has happened. Nothing ever happens to you. Nothing. So when you're... that all you need is the viveka, that discrimination to recognize me, the one who remains, what would mean asanga. Your being is continually untouched. Nothing ever happens to you. And yet everything depends on you. Consciousness and existence belong to you. Consciousness and existence doesn't belong to anything out here, because everything out here comes into existence and goes out of existence. If it comes into existence and goes out of existence, it has no existence of its own. It's borrowing your existence. When it's here, it's enjoying your being. Right? And your being doesn't come in and out of existence. Your being is. Everything in the world, everything in the universe is temporarily. That means everything in your experience is temporarily, means it's bordered by non-existence. Nothing comes from non-existence. Non-existence doesn't exist. So everything that is here really is what we call mitya. It's just enjoying your being. Your being is everything. There is nothing that's not your being, actually. If it weren't your being, it wouldn't exist. Nothing here has existence of its own. It comes into existence and goes out of existence. So the isness is not, you don't look at isness. You don't say, oh, look at the being over there. You are the being. You are the being which everything enjoys. You don't objectify being. The being experience is your own amness. We just call it amness, arness, isness. But it's only one being. It's not objectified. And that being is my own amness. So if that's confusing for you, then just say, I is. This am and I is. See what I mean? These are just words. They're words. But the being is me. I'm the one and the only one that is not coming and going. And so that viveka has to be there in order for me to appreciate that. And then what am I, this being? What am I like? Why am I so important to myself? Why am I the para-ananda? Well, because there's nothing I love more. Well, why does this deserve my love? Why am I so loved? No? Because my nature is ananda, and to know what that means, you can say, well, it expresses in the mind as joy and love and care and beauty. It expresses in the mind in this way, but you still have to differentiate and see, well, what is this me that expresses in the mind that way? Why am I so precious to myself? That, the recognition of that, I would say like this, the recognition of that is really where the moksha lies. Because to just recognize yourself as ongoing existence, changeless being, changeless consciousness, is not enough. You have to recognize that there is nothing more beloved. That has to click. You have to see it. You have to recognize it. And then, problem solved. problem is solved because I am what is most dear. Until that time, I'm projecting what is most dear.
Could you fix the screen?
Oh, yeah, we're getting... Oh, that's why. Yeah. I'm glad I don't sleep in here tonight. Yeah. Okay, so let me just finish.
What happened?
Nothing. We're good. Okay. You did enough. Mm-hmm. That's it. Good. Good enough. Swasti prajapya paripalintam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane bhyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshati parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam kshobarahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sagamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritam gamaya Om purnamadav purnamidam purnat purnamidachyate Purna
Asya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
So this origin of feeling important and special, that is really emanating from my own being. It's not anything to do with the upadhi. Is that where that emotion comes from?
That's interesting. Probably, yeah. There's a lot of superimposition going on, to do, like your body and your mind, superimposed on your body and your mind. But the specialness or ananda of your being, it is. There is nothing more dear than that, so in that way. But that all gets kind of confused because of the samsara, you know, because of the hurts and superimpositions and all of this. So if you think of I am special, I this body am special. I am special, I this mind is special, I this person am special, you know. But the specialness can be the Satchit Atma, the ananda of the Atma. But it's perversely, because of Ajnanam, superimposed on all the, in all different ways under the world, like, it even me, you're special, I'm not special.
Yeah.
You know, other people are special, I'm not special. That's all different types of superimposition, yeah, going on. There's all different levels of superimposition, not just of the ananda of the self, but also of all your own hurts and pains. It's a lot to, sometimes there's a lot to unravel.
Because I think we all feel important, and then you ask yourself, what is the origin of that feeling?
Atma.
Huh?
Atma.
Well, I think the only way you ever experience Atma is yourself. I don't experience, you know, I can infer.
Yeah, yeah, you don't experience, yeah.
But I don't experience him as a subject. I don't experience...
But you know why? It's because there's only one subject.
There's only one subject. But I experience me with my mind. You're,
yeah.
And so...
Well, actually, you don't experience me with my mind, with your mind.
Uh-huh.
You really don't.
But you assume that.
You do. But the me experience has nothing to do with your mind or with the universe. If you get rid of the whole universe, the me experience, this very personal me experience, is self-aware. What is there. Self. That's what we mean by self-evident.
But we use the word self. You know.
Self, Atma.
Atma.
Self. Atma.
So I wouldn't say self. I mean, from Ajnani, I wouldn't say he's myself. I would say this is myself.
This is myself. That's right.
But that's myself.
And so, since this is the only place,
I
seem to experience myself, then I'm special because I don't see it anywhere else.
Yeah, except that you can be so hurt that you see somebody else, you project that specialness on somebody else. See, everything about the Atma can be projected onto something else, or even onto a certain quality within yourself, and then not and another quality hated. Mm-hmm. You know, this projection, which is taking place by the mind, is complicated. It can do just about whatever it wants, really, in terms of projecting because my being is unknown. Right, the source of my who I am is really unknown in terms of myself being limitless and the self of all beings, of being the very source of ananda. That's unknown still until it's known. Otherwise, it's taken, it's automatically taken to be one of the body, the mind, the sense organs, you know. And then your Ananda is projected out onto the world, and you're running out trying to attain it, to get it back, basically. And then you get it back for a moment, and you feel so happy, and then it goes again. And you're running out again to try to bring it back. It's because you don't know the source. The source is projected out here because of ignorance, and you believe it. You run after it and try to get it. Then you fulfill a desire, and because you fulfill the desire, your mind becomes quiet. And so in the quiet mind, the Ananda of yourself resonates in that mind, becomes dominant in that mind, reflects in that mind. And so you think you're right. The Ananda was there, I went, I got it, and now I'm happy. But it only lasts for a few seconds. 15 seconds, 20 seconds. Just think about it. You get the rush of having fulfilled the desire. The rush is gone, and now you have the desired object. But you don't have that Ananda that it was supposed to give. And that happens again and again and again. Where are you going, Hira? Oh. Yeah. Please take me, Mom.
But she's saying she's not experiencing me.
Well, that's because the self is never objectified.
Okay.
I'm objective.
Exactly what I meant.
It's never objectified, and I'm experiencing you. You're through my sense organs.
Yeah.
Right? But I'm experiencing Ananda as me, not as you. Because I'm experiencing you as your body, mind, sense organs through the sense organs. So what I have to recognize is the self-evident nature of me, and that in fact this body is also objectified, as is your body. Mm-hmm. This mind is objectified as your mind is, and this me self is illuminating the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very neat.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
That takes care of all the differences.
Well, it does, actually. But you're not going to experience, I'm not going to experience you as a self-objectified self, because the self can't be objectified.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an object. It's the ultimate subject. And there's no subject behind that to objectify.
And consciousness can't be objectified. So I can only infer that he's conscious because you have two arms, two legs, he kind of acts like me.
You.
I guess he's conscious.
But you can't experience an externalized consciousness.
Right.
You have to recognize that the one consciousness that is you is the consciousness that is everybody. You have to understand that. There's a lot of logic and a lot of experience to help you. The whole teaching pramana, all of the prakriyas, all of the ways the teaching help you to recognize that fact.
Yeah.
And then say, I'm talking to you, there's a subject-object relationship, but I know who you are completely because I know myself. And there can only be one self, there can't be two. To be two, it has to be an object within duality. That means it has to be objectified. The self can't be objectified like that. It's the ultimate subject. So I know you because I know myself. That's how I know you. Not because I'm looking at an objectified self.
You said that earlier in the day.
Did Hero get to go to the bathroom? Good.
This is how
good
we
boy.
Can understand each other.
Yeah.
This is only just the one self.
One self and all minds are the same in terms of their structure. You know, how a mind works. They have the same set of emotions, but all different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the mind, just like bodies all work, the hands grasp, ears hear, legs walk, you know. That's why we can have science and have medicine and all these type of things, because bodies are the same and different within that sameness. Minds are all the same also. What we need is all the same. We need to be loved. It's very simple. That's what we need. We need to be loved, but the being loved should be independent. Like, let me just be loved, but don't let me have to depend on anybody or anything to be loved. Because if I have to depend on somebody, then I become dependent on that person for me to feel loved. And that's a very threatening situation. Let me just feel loved and be with you. But I don't want to be loved because of you. I just want to be loved. Because that's your nature. Of course you want that, because that's who you are. That's the nature of Ananda. So it's natural for you to want that because that's who you are. You want to be who you are.
Would the term be rooted in Atma? Would that be a good term?
What?
Rooted in Atma?
It depends on how you're using it. Because it is the Atma that is loved by its swarupa, by its nature. So I'm kind of using that as a passive tense, is loved. So if I say the Atma is loved, why I'm saying that is because is loved is a completed state. Because I say I am loved, then I have what I need. I'm loved, right? But now say I am loved. I get rid of the whole universe, all duality, there's only the self there, and that self is loved without anybody loving it. It is loved because that is its nature.
Mm.
And that's why being loved is so important to us, because that's who we are. We are loved by our nature, not in a verbal sense. Loved is a completed state. You know, loving is a verb. To love is a verb. You know, giving love is a verb. But loved, being loved, is a completed state. Right? If you understand how I am using it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in fact, when I feel loved, I feel most like myself. That's who I actually am. So as your mind discovers that, it more and more stays with you.
But you know, when the child is developmentally raised, unless it has that actual love from the parent, it doesn't really develop right. It can't,
yeah.
I mean, children can't grow up without having the actual, well, as you're talking about parents, I mean, they can, but they don't grow up well.
No, they don't.
They don't grow up right. I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, you can't.
But the child is an ajnani. The child is ajnani, that ignorance is beginningless.
What?
The ignorance, self-ignorance is beginningless. The child, little child also has self-ignorance. And as a jiva, as body, mind, sense organs, little baby, it is also, and with the mother, there's like an archetypal relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the little baby needs to be held and loved so that, loved actually, physically,
yes.
Held and loved so that it is being in, like in embraced in the self. The mother is carrying the self at that time, as though it's embracing the baby. And the baby needs to be embraced like that, you know, for as much as possible. One teacher said, he was talking about his little boy that they just had a child. He said, we just fill him up with love all the time. Because that allows this upadhi to grow. The body, mind, sense organs to grow properly. You know, it's dependent. It depends upon you. So that's all within this relative realm.
Mm.
For this mind and body and everything to grow without complexes and hurts and to flower properly, it needs the love of the parents. So it needs to be loved. But now when we're talking about self-knowledge, we're talking about where does that be loved experience come from, really. So now if we look at it again, the parents or the mother is holding the baby, providing it with this absolute comfort, so the baby is relaxed and its mind is relaxed. And in that relaxed mind, it feels so held and so loved. Right? And when the baby is freaking out and crying, the mother picks the baby up, holds him, calms him, and then he feels, again, he calms down. And then the mind becomes quiet and he feels loved. But where's the source of the love? The source of the love is still the Atma. Now, say you're in a relationship with your lover, somebody who you love. So you're in a relationship and you're being held by your lover. Then you feel loved. You feel loved. And then, but how are you really getting that feeling? Is your lover kind of pushing it into you or something? No. What's happening is physically, mentally, you're just letting go and relaxing. And then your own nature becomes dominant. And you feel loved. That's a little way I'm talking about it. It's a little tricky. You have to think about it. You know.
So when you're raising a child, maybe you could kind of...
give them the most love possible.
But also explain maybe Atma to them, and so that they can grow more and more independent from needing parental love and approval.
The thing is that you have to teach your children on an age-appropriate level. So you'd have to tell them stories and whatnot of things that their little mind can make use of. I've heard Swamiji teach some little Vedanta, little things to children, you know, and he does it really, really beautifully. You just figure out what with your little child, what would be most useful for them now, developmentally appropriate, that would be really helpful. And then you tell them those little things in a language with stories and whatnot in the way, you know, that they can pick up. But it just has to be age appropriate. There's a lot of little things you can teach children.
I used to go to those classes Swamiji would give to the kids.
Yeah. A lot of us would
sit they were
in the
great.
You'd have to sit in the back and
see. Yeah, little kids like this and then would.
Well, some children would not receive that love. I mean, there might be orphan children or in foster care or whatever.
Yeah, it can be very hard on them. Yeah. But they say, though, what they in the therapy world we say is that even though there can be a tremendous amount of deprivation, even from both of your parents, if there is one person, just one person, that's enough for the child to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be an aunt, it could be a neighbor, just that's one person.
Mm-hmm.
Or even a little doggy that they love.
Yeah.
But it loves them.
A little doggy that loves them.
Mm.
Yeah. It's amazing. We're very resilient. Very resilient, but you do need something.
Mm.
You can't have everything taken away. Or you'll die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are films, actually, of some orphaned children, like it was in the 1940s, and they weren't given, they were all in their cribs. They were given, you know, food and all of that, but they weren't held at all. And they died within a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
They had food and clean clothes and all of that, but they weren't held or loved. There was no real contact. Mm-hmm. There was too many of them.
And then also do experiments like with monkeys that they, you know, what there was like
a terry cloth.
And they had sort of milk. They could sort of, you know, get the food, but they preferred the one that they could smuggle up to.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, but if the children, if they need the love and they need the hugs, they'll die. But then, as an adult, we love ourselves, so we don't need the hug and the love anymore. We just need to love ourselves.
No,
so we don't
need
any outside.
But that's if you're a jnani, if you have self-knowledge, that can be true. But if you don't, you have no idea where the source of your wholeness is, and we're always looking outside for it. Like, you need to give it to me, or you need to give it to me, or I need to get it from this, or I need to get it from that. You don't know that the source of love is really your own being. That's what we mean by self-ignorance. And so, with that self-ignorance always projected out, and then you're running after it. Yeah.
But could you also give like some praise and love to yourself if you feel that you're not getting enough from...
You can if you know to do that. That's a great thing to know how to do. In fact, that's re-raising the little one inside. Like the little girl or little boy inside, you say, no, you didn't. He's feeling kind of hurt and pouty and nobody's... You say, no, you're
done a good job there.
You're a good job. You're a really good boy. I'm proud of you. You say that, you're a good girl. You're a beautiful girl. You're a wonderful girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as you are. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything. You're beautiful just as you are. Yeah. That's what we need. You don't have to say, you're a good girl when you do this, this, and this. That creates a big problem.
Special, all this.
Yeah.
So we could go on here for another 3 years just straight.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Only 3 years. Just keep on going.
Just keep on going.
I mean, I don't want to leave. I mean, I don't know.
We're lucky we have this time together. It's a good thing. Om Tat Sat.